This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to you all. This is the SubPro Work Team 4, IDN Technical and Operations Working Team call, meeting number 9 on the 20th of April at 2000 UTC. We're rather hopeful, Ruben and myself, Cheryl and Denor, the two co-rapporteurs of this group, that a couple more people may turn up in the next minute or two. But regardless of how many turn up, we have enough, and I'd like to thank everyone for taking the effort and energy to attend today's call. If we can move to the next slide, please. I'd like to ask anybody if they have an update to their statements of interest, if they can make themselves known now. And failing hearing anyone there, I want to remind everyone that we will be taking the roll call. Not going to be a difficult one, even if we did everyone's names out loud, but we will take the roll call from the Adobe Connect room attendance. So if there is anybody who is only on the phone, please let us know now. So far, so good. And I'd also like to remind you all that when you start to speak or make an intervention, and Rubens and I encourage you to speak and make interventions, it shouldn't be just a monologue from him and I, or that'd be a dialogue, but you know what I mean. We do want to have interaction and discussion, particularly on today's topic, and you just need to identify yourselves with your name for the record. That said, our agenda for today is in front of you. I've done the beginnings, welcome and opening remarks and SOI updates. We've got Avi on the call. We believe Jeff will be joining us shortly. Welcome, Tran. But Avi, if you wouldn't mind taking us through a brief update of the full working group activities, we'd appreciate that. Thank you, Avi.
Thank you. This is Avi speaking. Not a lot. In fact, probably have already heard this in another sub-team call. But anyhow, in the full group, we spent the last meeting basically working on the CCT issues. We had the folks from CCT in, talked through various issues. We've put together a response to the CCT team, to the CCT open comment, which is up for review, is out up for review, and we'll be talking through in the next meeting, hopefully basically sending it off at that point. The main activity at the moment for many of us is getting ready for the geographical names at the top level webinars on next week. And notices have gone out about that. Everyone is invited. Everyone is asked to please sign up in advance, et cetera. So the webinars are on the 25th at two different times. One of them is at 15, I believe, and one of them is at 22 UTC. Okay, so the other work that's going on is we're trying to get the drafting teams on the open issues in CC1 working. Staff has given us a initial document to work from so that we don't have the blank sheet of paper syndrome, and we're trying to get that work going now. Let me see. And I think that's about it, unless there's something I forgot. That's pretty much where we are, and we're continuing the work. Oh, yeah, the CC2 comment issue, we did get a formal request from GAC for an extension. We discussed it, and it looks like we can offer an extension of, I guess it was 3 weeks, and still make the document deadline for Johannesburg. So we put that out for discussion to see if there are any objections. I haven't seen any objections yet. One of the things I want to make sure of, though, is that anybody that has been working on it and it is done, that they send it in. And they can always send it more later if they feel the need to. But that give, since the sub-teams are working on many of those issues now, it allows us to start folding in an understanding of what some of the issues are as early as possible. So just because we extend the submission date, I'm hoping that that does not stop people from still trying to finish as quickly as they can. I don't think I forgot anything. If I do, I'm sure that Steve or Emily or Julie can pitch in and let me know what I forgot. Thank you.
Thanks, Avery. Cheryl and Jill for the record, and I don't see any of their hands going up, but it looks like you ticked all the boxes. No, seriously, thanks for that, because I think you'll find that a few people on this call, in fact, haven't been on some of the other work team calls, and it would have been fresh news. So I'll thank you on their behalf. I have heard it before, but you did it just as well this time. With that, if we can move to the next slide, please, we're going to start our primary topic of discussion for today, which is a two-parter. We're going to be looking at name collisions in legacy GTLDs and then name collisions in the 2012 round GTLDs. And with that, I am going to take a much-needed sip of my morning coffee and hand over to Rubens. Rubens, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Cheryl. Good time of day, everyone. First of all, we need to be very clear on what we are discussing in the call today. Even though we are in a call for new GTLD subsequent procedures work groups, which is usually deals about defining policies and implementation of those policies for the next procedures of new GTLDs, there are some topics in our charter that refers to make develop or confirm policy for currently established GTLDs. One of those topics is a topic from Work Track 2, which is closed generics. So if you are interested in closed generics, you are in the wrong call, since we are here at Work Track 4, which deals with IDM, technical evaluation, financial evaluation, name collisions. So the topics that we'll be going for during this call are about name collisions, which is when DNS system reacts unexpectedly for an end user. So an end user was expecting something, whether that expectation was reasonable or not, it's something different, but an end user was expecting the DNS system to work in a way, and it works in a different way. That's a very lame terms explanation for name collisions. And there are two topics in our charter for us to deal with name collisions in current GTLDs. And we divide those topics in two sections. One for legacy GTLDs, so .com, .net, .org, that already happens every day. And next session will be for the 2012 round GTLD. So for the legacy GTLDs, there are plenty of situations that happens every day when name collisions happen. One of the situations is where an organization uses an internal domain that is not registered, and that organization thinks that, oh, nobody will register that. Nobody wants to register my company name, internalnetwork.com. And all of a sudden, someone finds that out and ends up registering that domain. And that makes something different happen for users that previously expected that domain not to work. The other situation that happens is due to one possible configuration DNS system called DNS suffix list, when although it's all this situation can also happen with something else called DNS devolution, which is behavior mostly of Microsoft's operating system. But what happens is that an internal name that people were supposed that was internal, let's say acme.corp, ends up generating DNS requests for acme.corp.com. And so the person who registered corp.com in this example can access that traffic and possibly make end users go to some place they didn't want. So that can happen with lot more domains than corp.com. There is setproxy.com, a lot of domains that can trigger such behavior. And this happens every now and then to either to operating system bugs or to misconfigurations or configurations that I imagine to achieve something and end up exposing that network to a different behavior. So first of all, let's look at current policy on this. Current policy on this is no policy. So there is currently no policy allowing those problems to be addressed by contracted parties, except for that came up with an expedited security policy request. So sometimes this can be addressed, but there is no formal policy defining what could be done. So this is done by currently on a case-by-case basis. And our option as a work track, which then become options as a work group, will be to see whether we leave the policy as it is or whether we create some new policy so that can be more quickly addressed by contracted parties. So there are pros and cons to every policy change. One thing that is clear is that this kind of involvement in how the DNS system works is pretty much what I can usually doesn't do. So I can usually just not pose itself as the DNS police or anything like that and leave everything that happens either with illegal activities or security issues to be addressed by either law enforcement or security coordination or so forth. So adopting such a policy would be somewhat unprecedented in ICANN. But on the other hand, having such a policy could possibly allow reacting quicker to issues that could arise. Although some of the issues are part of the registry mandate, they usually can address mostly if a domain is not registered. What they can do is unregister a domain or take a domain that is being used to perpetrate such threats. So the question here is, do we want to give contracted parties the authority to take those domains that happen to be used in such a way back? And if we do want them, how do we limit the scope so this does not become a blank check for everything that a contracted party would do? So what are the views of the callers here? Do we keep the policy as it is, or do we change and do we introduce such a change? Idea? Does anybody want to speak, to say what they prefer?
Anne, over to you.
Yes, thank you, Cheryl. It's Anne for the transcript. I think I'm missing a basic fact in that I don't know what would be the definition of quote-unquote collision domains. I know that, and I think when you're considering a possible policy change, you have to kind of figure out, well, you know, how many names are you talking about? What's the, and it's not clear to me at all from a technical standpoint, what's the set of collision domains. I'll just say that you know, my familiarity is probably limited to, you know, the discussion in the SAC 90 report, the 2012 applications and the JAS advisors report. To consider the policy, how do we identify what are the collision domains? Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. It's Rubens here. One of the problems in defining such a policy is that those domains are generated by either software bugs or configuration bugs or human misconfigurations of software devices. So we can't anticipate what would those domains be, because if we could, we would simply issue a blanket prohibition for, oh, don't register those domains ever. But that's not how it happens. So you are pretty right that not knowing the scope is one of the things that makes difficult to write a policy on that, because we can't foresee what are the software bugs. For instance, one of the domains that this happens, call it cipinternal.com. CIP is the acronym for voice software on internet telephony. This domain is a collision domain because there is one behavior by a specific Microsoft tool, Microsoft Communicator, that asks for that domain. So we can't predict at this point what will be the bugs that will end up generating such collisions. If we could, people would simply not write those bugs into software, but there is no flawless software, at least in our current level of computer science. So what we ask people to do now is to use the Adobe Connect voting tool. So everyone who thinks that this shouldn't be changed, we should keep policy as it is, which means do not have a policy on this, can go to the agree button. And people who think that we need a policy, this is so harmful that this needs to be addressed, can vote with the red X and say, no, we need to tackle this. Not seeing many green or red. Anne is asking to speak again. Please go ahead, Anne.
Yes, thank you. It's just a follow-up question. How does this whole area relate to, for example, the the APD reports that issued in connection with the 2012 applications and the first launch, and there were options associated with those APD reports in terms of launching and holding back those names or waiting to launch. And is there a relationship between collision domains and those and the APD reports?
Hi, and thank you for the question. No, there is no connection. In fact, one of the reasons that this specific topic was added to this group charter was that some people complained that the main collision issue was so much linked to new DTLDs that people thought that they could only happen in new DTLDs. But that's not true. They can happen in all TLDs, not only in GTLDs, can happen in CCTLDs as well. So our charter gave us a mandate to look at what happens into current GTLDs. So this only relates to domains like WTAD.com or domains that are in TLDs that existed for decades, but this problem already occurred on them. Next, we have Avery. Please go ahead, Avery.
Thank you. And I have a slight cough, so if I start coughing, apologies. This is Avery speaking. So yeah, I'm just trying to get some more information on this. First of all, I think when we're talking about the ESSAC report and the JAS report, we're really talking about the collisions at the top level, whereas here I think we're also talking about at lower levels. Now, one of the things that certainly at the top level that they did with the last round was did come up with certain timeouts, with certain mitigations that perhaps they didn't go far enough on or could have done more on or perhaps went too far on. Heard all kinds of arguments over, you know, timings being too long in terms of holding off or what have you. And I'm not sure I'm necessarily getting all the terminology correct. Now, we may encounter that kind of collision and we may, you know, and we'll certainly encounter this second and third level and beyond collision that can occur, you know, as you say, even with legacy names. I'm wondering on a couple things. First of all, have there been any studies, as there were in JAS for top level, on some of these well-known second levels? Do we have that kind of data? Do we have any follow-on data from the mitigation strategies that were used in the previous round that would help us sort of understand when it does occur, what does it take? And do we have any suggestions as to perhaps there being a yellow track in this, which is that perhaps we're not changing the policy, but nor are we, you know, forcing any behavior on contracted, but we're coming up with a recommendation for follow-on activities for, you know, greater study of mitigation. Of how one informs people, of how one educates people to protect themselves and their corporations against these kinds of things, and so on. So I'm wondering if there isn't a track between red and green that looks at guidelines and mitigation pathways. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Next we have Anne. Go ahead, Anne.
Thank you very much. It's Anne again. I think there was some discussion at the last meeting in Copenhagen between the board and the registries in relation to the topic of name collision. And some of the comments from Dr. Crocker, I think, reflected some of the content of a meeting that occurred between the board and ESSEC, in which one of the topics that was covered was named collision, and I think the ESSEC made 3 points about how, you know, named collisions should be handled going forward. One of the things they said was named collisions will always be with us. They said, you know, we need to figure out how we're going to manage them, and they said that we need to coordinate with other organizations such as the IETF with respect to the topic of named collision, and I guess there's a list that's also maintained by IETF. They talk about the need for predictability in the DNS and managing expectations. And so I guess when, I mean, it seems reasonable, as Avi's proposing, that, you know, you would talk about, well, hey, what are the available mitigation techniques? But I also think we have to start from the point of the available information on which the policy decision was made previously. And again, I will point out once again to anyone who does not know that our firm had represented the United States Postal Service in connection with the .mail domain. I don't want that to be, you know, misunderstood in relation to this whole discussion about named collision, but I'm really talking, you know, also just from a general policymaking standpoint, that there's history here as to, I mean, shouldn't we be having ESSEC make a presentation to us on named collision? They're the Security and Stability Advisory Committee. Shouldn't we be trying to figure out what the IETF says? You know, shouldn't we review the JAS Advisors Report? Shouldn't we be using these resources that already exist within the community? Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Next, we have Alan. Please go ahead, Alan.
Thank you. I think Anne, in her last couple of sentences, hit it right on the nose. We are talking about something which is complex. We do not have full control over. We will never have full control over. I mean, my first experience with this, it was years ago when I typed in an invalid .ca domain, and that was at a time when the world presumes there was only .com. And my browser, Netscape at the time, if anyone remembers that, added a .com because it assumed I was obviously mistaken since I hadn't included a real TLD in my URL. You know, so we're never going to have full control of these kind of things, but I think if we're going to try to make any policy recommendation, we have to do it from a position of actually understanding what's going on and getting advice or at least input from those people who have made it, you know, close to a career of doing this. So it's an interesting discussion, but I don't really think we're in a position to do it properly today. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Please, Cheryl, go ahead.
Thanks, Ruben. This is Cheryl Langenor, for the record. I put myself in the queue, and I'm now taking off my co-rapporteur's hat because I wanted to speak from a personal perspective and make it very clear that's what I was doing. So, but what I am doing is coming in very much behind what Anne has raised and Alan has agreed with. I've certainly always recognised that these issues are certainly out of our sole control. Thanks for pointing that out, Alan, but also extremely important. And yes, it would be very nice if we could have a kumbaya moment and all work together, but we also need to make some recommendations out of this work team. And if that is towards that end game, then that's fine. But I think Avery's point of exploration of middle grounds are very worthy of consideration. I think we should make a file note to come back to that and explore that as a group, because I think that, again, makes an awful lot of sense to me as an individual internet end user. But I do recognise that what Rubens and I have done is assume
perhaps that the background materials that have been available for a while on this are better understood than perhaps they are by all our participants. We've often said, you know, we don't really have the sexy stuff to talk about, but we do have the important stuff to talk about. And so perhaps I'm guilty of, certainly, being a little complacent and assuming that you're all here because you have a highly impassioned interest in all of the gory details. You probably do, but let's assume that we should perhaps do what Anne said and ask at least SAC if they would like to not just have their resources used and listed for our background reading and materials, which of course is what they are, but to do a presentation. What we've been doing, of course, is trying to balance the necessity of moving this program forward to a desired timeline, and obviously coming up with some recommendations to come back to plenary on these issues, and perhaps taking too much of a 101 approach. But it seems to me, Rubens, and you and I haven't spoken about this, obviously, that it might be a good idea for us to mark this as a topic that we will continue to obviously have our conversation about now because it's good background and discussion, but also as we did in the case of universal acceptance, you know, bringing that expertise, and that certainly SAC would be one of the first ones to look at that, and do what Anne quite sensibly suggested, and perhaps have a couple of briefing for beginning of call and discussion in follow-up, or perhaps a couple of briefings and then a meta-discussion. But I'll take that back with Rubens and the rest of the leadership and discuss what that will do to our timeline. But thanks very much for that, Anne. And now I'm sticking my co-rector hat back on and handing it back to Rubens. Thanks.
Thank you, Cheryl. Today, I think we conclude this topic, so if staff can move to the next slide, please. So still in the arena of domain registered in all the TLDs, one other collision vector is where a user registers a domain, uses that domain for a while, and then let it expire, and someone else comes and registers it. So it can steer some of the traffic and some of the end user attention that previously went to that domain. So the policy question here is whether we believe the current policies that apply to such an issue, which are the expired domain deletion policy and the expired registration recovery policy, which are the policy that created redemption grace periods, the redemption task itself, and how domains are removed from the system instead of being removed at once. These are currently established policies. So the policy question here is whether you believe that these policies are enough. So users that don't recover a domain, usually like a month or so of it expiring, should face the consequences of not renewing that domain, or if you believe one or two or both policies should be revisited and changed. So as always, as Avery mentioned, we usually stick with the status quo, that believing that those policies are enough. In this case, the status quo is that there are already policies on that. They have already created, let's say, a buffer mechanism for that. Not, it can prevent every occurrence of this issue, but it can prevent some occurrences. So the discussion team now is, do we believe these are enough, or should we make them more strict, or should we make domains that were once registered never expire, and even if a user does not renew, no one will ever be able to register that domain again. So the policy questions are, is there anything for us to change in this regard? So any takers on commenting on this? So far seems no one is. Anne, please go ahead, Anne.
Yes, thank you. It's Anne again for the transcript. I guess what I'm still struggling with is a lack of data. We're considering some very big, you know, possible changes in policy, and we're talking about, you know, what are the possible threats, and I don't think we have data, and I don't think we've asked for the data. So I'm really hung up here. Thank you.
Thank you, Anne. Alan, please go ahead.
Yeah, I'm not sure we're missing data in the sense that we have to go invent some or do studies. But to be quite candid, these are documents that I read a long time ago, and maybe I should have done more prep for this meeting than just showing up, but that's what I did. And I'm not prepared to have this discussion, and I suspect just providing the documents as reading material and expecting everyone to have accepted to have processed them is probably asking a bit much. So I think we need to do some consciousness raising, and that may take the form of someone coming and giving some overviews to us, or maybe it's just making some reading assignments and trying to make sure that people do them. I'm out of my depth today. I think I'm capable of assessing the issues, but I'm not prepared to do them today, certainly.
Thank you, Alan. Next we have Avery. Please go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that, you know, having read most of the things that are in the reading lists, if not all, but never swear to reading all of something, you know, there's still a lot of issues that are hard to digest, and I think we also may find that not every statement in those documents is gospel, especially since there are a few different places that they come from. There may even be differences. There's also a lot of them are dated, and the experience of the new GTLD that we've done, and the collisions and all the testing on what indeed are the collision rates and which are happening and to what order is all very old, and I think is all pre, you know, the expansion. I may be wrong, so please correct me if there has been. So I think that the two things that people are talking about make sense. One is, you know, not presume that people didn't read, but presume that even if they did read, they could have questions, because some of those documents are difficult, and some of them are sometimes quite interesting. And also, though, that I don't think we have new data, and perhaps I'm wrong, but looking at the data that's in those reports and that's referred to and that previous recommendations were made on, I think is older data. So finding out if there is new data, there may be new data that I've missed. Perhaps it's listed on our wiki, but I don't remember seeing it. But so that may be something that's worth exploring further. Thanks.
Thank you, Avery. I think that closes pretty well the discussion of this topic, so we can move to the next topic. So staff could please advance the slide. One more, please. So, we are still in the areas of a charter that discusses previously delegated TLDs, not subsequent procedures. And one of the items in our charter was to look at the implementation of the name collision framework for those 2,200 registries. Most specifically, what was foreseen to them on an ongoing basis. Because when we discuss, which is a further topic down the road, name collision framework for next procedures, we discuss controlled interruption or APD, APB block list. This item of a charter refers to TLDs that already went to what was specified in the name collision framework, which is to require during 2 years, the first 2 years after delegation, that the registry had capability to respond within 2 hours for collision reports that were deemed to be life-threatening or deemed to be causing harm to human life. So far, until early March, ICANN had received 37 occurrences of report of any type of collision, of any severity of collision, and none of them were life-threatening, which was kind of expected. This was a risk that was mentioned during the 2012 process. So the questions here, which are very specific to already delegated 2012 round TLDs, is whether we believe that this process was enough for the collision risk, and or whether we believe that something needs to change. For instance, for extending this response period beyond 2 years, a good number of TLDs already reaches that length. Delegation, some of the new TLDs haven't. So some of them are still in that interval where a possible condition could be raised and they need to respond within 2 hours. Alan asked in the chat where you can find reports of those 37 occurrences. ICANN staff has not published those. We can ask them, but we probably get an empty response. But at least we should ask and let them say, no, we won't comment, or this is security related and they won't answer, but we definitely can ask them. So any takers on whether we should keep the implementation as it is? In this case it's not policy, in this case it's implementation of the name collision framework. We should leave the implementation as it is, or we should change something. Please, Alan, go ahead.
It's reassuring that none of them were life-threatening, but I don't have a clue how close any of them came to being life-threatening, or I'm not even sure what life-threatening means. So without having at least a sample of what the occurrences were, I feel completely unable to assess which way we should go in this case. I mean, obviously there's not a heavy case that we should make for extending the period, but I would really like to understand it and make an informed decision rather than just saying, okay, there weren't any till now, and we don't know how close they came, but let's say ignore it. So I think we either under you know, I'm willing to go under non-disclosure if there's some sort of reason why, but I think at least some of us need to understand what the collisions were and understand them. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Since ICANN is probably not much forthcoming in discussing such collisions, I will provide one example of one collision that occurred that I don't even know if they are listed in the 37 because it seems to be dealt with by the registry and the software provider. There is one application that when it tries to resolve one domain in a new GTLD, and whenever that response is not that the domain doesn't exist, that mobile application ceases to work at all. And this is a somewhat very well-known mobile application. So there are occurrences that reach this level of disruption, but it's usually only digital disruption, not anything that goes to, like, a power plant or a medical device or something like that, which are some of the risks that were mentioned during the process, but none that I would ever heard anything about had anything near life-threatening proposition. Next we have Cheryl. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Ruben. Cheryl for the record, and taking off her hat again, because eons ago I actually used to earn my keep in quality systems management world, and that included the development of critical control point analysis in industries where you certainly didn't expect things to go wrong, but if they did, there were serious consequences, which did involve the loss of human life and other harms. And you really want to make sure, of course, with all of these things, that you err on the side of caution, but not to such an extent that it cripples your industry. And I know that's a very odd thing to try and come to terms with in some people's minds, but you do have models in other than the domain name system world where reasonable efforts are made and best practices developed, where you can analyse risk and look at potentials and mitigations and the cost of those mitigations and compare those to the cost of something going wrong. And there are even products out there that you can now these days tug and play. You know, do the stuff I used to do as a human. There is now some sort of, you know, clever analysis tool that will do it. It's probably a lot cheaper than I was too. But anyway, that's an aside. I just wanted to make sure that, you know, just because something hasn't happened yet doesn't mean it can't or won't happen, and one has to recognise the consequences of some things when they do happen. And when we're talking about harm to humans, when it can be attributed to a cause that is attributable to another's action, or even in a worse situation, was predicted and then not avoided, can be a very costly exercise. Not the least of which, you know, the ongoing reputation of harms, not just to the individual and the case issues involved, but the industry in general. So just wanted to raise that. Thank you.
Thank you, Cheryl. Alan, is that an old hand or a new hand?
No, that's a new hand. Rubens, your example, if I heard it correctly, was a case where someone... It was the mobile application was looking for a name that didn't exist and then froze. And that's not a collision. So I'm still running, unless I misheard you, I'm still running completely blind as to the kinds of issues that that are among those 37 reported. So I take the position, and I'm willing to be convinced otherwise, that without at least a sampling of those, if not the full set, that ICANN is aware of, I do not believe we are in a position to make the decision that we're being asked to make. And as I said, if it requires non-disclosure, I'm happy. But I can't, I'm not willing to accept the fact that we're supposed to make a decision on something which involved the words life-threatening the first go-round and do it blind. Thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Just a small note that most of the collisions are exactly what you mentioned, that a DNS lookup that usually responded with non-existent domain, and then it starts responding with an existing domain. The reason for that is most of those DNS lookups were part of a chain of lookups that were trying first one option and then one option and then one other thing. So what happens to disrupt the, that software is that that requested once was not non-existent, now it starts to exist. So we are now getting close to the hour, and we need to close up this worst threat call. The remaining slides are for the topics that were previously discussed. So when staff sends those slides, you can look at what is in our table, so we can look at them further down the road. So I'm making Cheryl to end up this call. Go ahead, Cheryl, and bye-bye.
Thank you, Ruben, and thank you all for furthering this conversation. And it is a matter of only furthering it. There's a lot more discourse to have on this very important topic. So this is Cheryl Engineer for the record, and giving you at least 3 minutes back of your life, hopefully. We're just going to call now for any other business. Is there any other business anyone wishes to make on this call? I think we can move to the next slide, which I think is the final farewell one. And with that, not hearing any other business, our next call will be in 2 weeks' time, and I'm afraid the time of day escapes me. If staff could pop that into the chat, that would be excellent. It's probably something particularly unfriendly for me in the Antipodes. But we'll get that into the chat and make sure it is in the agenda notes that go out as well. So with that, giving you all back 3 minutes of your lives and allowing Ruins and I to get on to our next meeting, I want to thank you all for today's conversation. I wanted to note that we will be continuing this, and we will do our best to bring in the briefing requirements and search out what researchers may be published and unpublished that we are unaware of, and get back to you on this topic, which will be continued. So thank you, one and all. Thank you, staff, and this call is now completed. Bye for now.
Thanks, Cheryl. Bye-bye.